Marriage Today presents Friends, Parenting, and Promises by Jimmy Evans.
Number 5, step of faith to possessing your dream marriage is the step of faith to separate from unhealthy relationships and connect to committed Christians. To separate from unhealthy relationships and connect to committed Christians. In Joshua 9, when the children of Israel took the promised land, God commanded them, you cannot have any alliance with any other nation. You will utterly destroy every nation there, and you will not have an alliance with any other nation. In Joshua 9, they made an alliance with the Gibeonites. And the Gibeonites deceived them, because that's what the devil always does. And they made an alliance, and it became a generational curse to the children of Israel. They began to intermarry with their children. They began to take their false gods and spread them through the nation of Israel. This was a generational curse because they did not do what God told them to do. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Now, let me say this. If you have good morals, if you're a good person, if you have done everything right and you get around evil company, it will corrupt you. Let me say, I followed the Lord. Karen and I have followed the Lord for 35 years. If I broke away from healthy fellowship today and got around unhealthy people, I would fall. Doesn't matter how strong I am. Doesn't matter how much I know God. None of us are the exception. Divorce and adultery runs in groups. Now, my friend Gary Rosberg, Dr. Gary Rosberg, Gary and Barb have a radio program, goes all across America. They're called America's Family Coaches. They're our friends. And Gary told me one day, he said, Jimmy, on our radio program, when someone comes in or when someone calls in and they tell us that they're divorcing, I always ask who else around you is divorcing. And he said, in most cases, they tell me someone else is divorcing because there's a support system for it. There's a support. You have a group of friends. There's a support system for divorce. There's a support system for adultery. Let me tell you, this is called the happy hour principle. People don't want to go to happy hour alone. So when they hate their husband or they hate their wife and they come to work, they want to offend you. If you've got any problem in your marriage, they want to stir everything up at the office and in their circle of friends so that you hate your husband or wife as much as they do, so they'll have somebody to go to happy hour with.
That's good. That's good.
Am I telling the truth? They're offended, they're hurt, and they go around and they spread that to other people. And so understand that it always happens that way. Now, when I was 19 years old and I got saved, the day I got saved, I didn't know how to hear from God. I've never heard from God in my entire life. The day I got saved, I heard God in my heart very clearly say, never see your friends again. Well, I had 10 best friends. I mean, that's kind of funny to say, but I had 10 best friends. And I'd grown up with these from elementary school and junior high. We did everything together. I had told Karen while we were dating, don't ever come between me and my friends because they're more important than you are. Wasn't that charming? It was just crazy. And the day I got saved, a week before we got married, the Lord said to me, never see your friends again. And I didn't. I cut off my friendships right there. And I'm telling you, you can understand how, you know, difficult that is when you've had these friends all of your life. I started going to church. Now, let me talk again about fear and about giants. I had never had an insecure moment in my life. I was popular in school, ran around with popular kids. Never had an insecure moment in my life until I started going to church. Now, let me tell you, I was a good sinner. I was a good cusser. I was a good drinker. I ran around and I was not a moral person. And I was good at all that. I was really good. I was comfortable in that environment. I didn't like Christians. I had never liked Christians. I just thought they were a bunch of geeks. And when I went to church, I was terrified. And Karen and I went into a Sunday school class. We had some friends that asked us to go to a Sunday school class. I'd cut off all of my relationships previously. And these friends that we had were people that we went to high school with that were Christians, committed Christians that wouldn't do the stuff that we did, that I did. But now that we got saved, they became our friends. We went into the Sunday school class and we were sitting there in the Sunday school class. It was a couple Sunday school class. I'm so nervous. I'm so out of place. I am just terrified that I'm going to accidentally cuss. And because I'd cussed, every word I said before was a cuss word, and I was just terrified of it, you know, that I would just let it slip. So I was still smoked. I was very self-conscious about that in the midst of all these church people. And we're in this Sunday school class, and we're sitting there like for the first time. They asked me to pray. I thought, oh my gosh, I was terrified. I mean, my blood pressure went up and I sat there and I thought, I didn't know how to pray. I never prayed. It was like, God. I mean, I literally sat there and I was just like, I just thought, this is why I don't ever want to come back, because I hate this. And I felt very unspiritual, because I really was, very self-conscious around people. I was really terrified. And we made a decision, Karen and I made a decision, that I was 19 years old, that we would go to church. That was just a decision we made. We were going to stay in church. Let me tell you what happened. First of all, it saved our marriage. We would not be married if it wasn't for church. I do not believe that people can make it in this day without church, without committed Christian friends. I'm saying that you can't make it. I don't believe that we could make it. We went to a Sunday school class with these precious people that were our Sunday school teachers. And when Karen and I were living in Canyon, when our marriage got so bad, I was being horrible to Karen one day, and she called her Sunday school teachers on me. It was really bad too, I'm telling you, it was getting out of hand. And so I get home and she announces to me that she has called our Sunday school teachers and we're going out to eat with them that night. Oh my gosh. And so we went out to eat that night. It was the most awkward experience in the world, you know. And I'm sitting there and they know everything I've done because she told them. She told them. And they were so gracious to us, you know, and we sat there that night at dinner with them, and he was an older gentleman, and he was so gracious. They'd been through all the stuff we'd been through. And in just the nicest, nicest way in the world, this guy said, hey, you're a jerk. And I mean, it just the nicest way. You know, it's kind of one of those kind of guys that you're with them, they're just wonderful, and like 10 minutes after you leave, you realize he called me a jerk. But I was a jerk. If it would not have been for church, we wouldn't have made it. And on the night when Karen and I, you know, almost broke up, is a friend of mine's mother in church had handed me a book. She probably knew how messed up I was, and she walked up and handed me a book on men. It was just on how to be a godly man. And in the days following, when our marriage was being healed, that book became a lifeline to me. Just something so small as just walking up and giving me a book. It saved our marriage. Church saved our marriage. If we would have been surrounded by ungodly friends, we wouldn't have made it. It also gave us a lifelong support group to do the right thing. I want to say something to you. And again, I don't want this to seem self-righteous, but we've never had friends around us telling us to do the wrong thing. Never in our adult life. Not one time. Well, no, excuse me. Almost one time. Let me explain to you. Our friends are friends who are committed to their marriages. And they want us to be committed. If I went to my friends and started ragging on Karen, they would take Karen's side every time. They would tell me, you make it right, you do the right thing. I don't have any friends that are women haters. And all of us are imperfect now. I mean, and I have friends that have been divorced and all that. I'm not saying that we're all perfect. I'm saying we are all committed to our marriages, and Karen's friends are also. And we had a friend one time, and these were people that we went to church with 30 years ago, and they helped us a lot. They were really instrumental in God helping us a lot in our lives. And they moved away from Amarillo, and when they moved, this man began to work with a very ungodly man and began to be around an old friend of his from high school who was also very ungodly and a womanizer. And after 3 or 4 months, we saw them several times after they moved, and over, it may have been longer than that, maybe 6 or 8 months, he changed. And this is a very godly man. It was his mother that gave me that book, by the way. And we began to see them when they would come back in town every month or two, and he changed. You could see it on his countenance how he had changed. And when I talked to him, he was withdrawn. When I talked to him about the Lord, he was withdrawn. And then I got a call one day from his wife. And she was telling me on the other end of the phone that he was leaving her. And I could hear their children in the background crying out, Daddy, don't leave us. And he got on the phone. Now, his wife was attractive and a wonderful, wonderful person. And he got on the phone and told me that he was going to live with his friend, his immoral friend, And he wasn't leaving his wife for another woman. He was leaving his wife for women. And he told me, Jimmy, if you knew the sexual fulfillment that's out there outside of marriage, you would go with me right now. Why don't I come by and pick you up? That's what he said to me. And I won't tell you what I told him. And it wasn't unrighteous, but I'm just not going to tell you what I told him. I gave him the short version. I was so frustrated. I could hear his children screaming in the background. And his wife called me and said, please talk him out of doing this. And I said, you wait right there until I get there, because I'm driving over to your house right now. You stay right there. And he said, I'm not staying. And I said, you have the perfect wife. And he said, you're right, I do have the perfect wife, but she doesn't give me enough sex. And I said, let me tell you something, buddy. You've been traveling on the road watching all these X-rated movies. A harem couldn't give you enough sex. Now you stay right there, and I'm coming right now. He left, and he left his wife and those little kids who are now grown adults. That's the only friend I had that did something like that. Before he did it, he broke off from Christian friends and got involved in unchristian friends. So let me ask you some questions about this issue here. Do you have close relationships with people who compromise your faith in God or your marriage or your morality? Do you have those relationships? Now, I did, I'm saying, and I had to break those off. Now, if you stay in those relationships, why do you stay in those relationships? Is it because of comfort? I mean, you're comfortable around those kind of people? Because I was comfortable around my friends. I could do anything and they wouldn't judge me. I mean, that was just true. Do you fear rejection? Because I was rejected from all my friends. About 3 or 4 years after all my friends were, I walked away from all my friendships. I saw one of my friends and he walked up to me on the street one day and he said, Evans, what is all this Jesus blank? I said, excuse me? He said, you're Jesus freak. What's wrong with you? He started cussing me and verbally abusing me. I got rejected by my friends. Fear of loneliness. I remember waking up one morning one night in the middle of the night crying. I wasn't meaning to cry, I was just crying because I was lonely. I'd lost all of my friends. I loved Karen. And Karen and I, it had saved our marriage literally for me to walk away from my friends, but I woke up crying because I was lonely. I didn't have any guy friends at all. Now I've got so many wonderful friends. Let me tell you, Christian friends are real friends. They'll stand with you. I'm not talking about your spouse, by the way. Because if your spouse, if there's something wrong, you work it out. If they're not a believer, you stay with him. That's what the Bible says, 1 Corinthians 7. I'm also not talking about being self-righteous and going to your friends and saying, I just went to a Jimmy Evans seminar and I'm too good for you. But here's what I am saying. That you go to your friends and you say this, I've made a decision to live for Christ and to try to do better. Come with me. Come with us. We're going to start going to church. We're going to start trying harder to do the right things and to stop doing some wrong things. And we all work around people and, we're around people, maybe family members that, you can't find the perfect job where there are no bad people or, divorce your family, the people that maybe are unpleasant. But let me say this, you can limit your exposure to those people to a place to where it doesn't have the wrong effect on you. And one of the things that you can do in limiting that is you have to have a base of good friends. You have to have people that are committed Christian people, that's your base of friendship. And when you keep coming back to a group of believers, you keep encouraged, you minister to each other, and you're able to go back into the world and survive it. But when you don't have a base of close Christian friends, they'll wear you down. The negativity will wear you down. The immorality will wear you down. And they're constantly trying to get you to do the wrong thing. They just wear on you and beat on you and beat on you. The women haters, the men haters, the marriage haters, the immoral people. They're trying to get you to go to the strip bars. They're trying to get you to do this. They're demeaning God. They're demeaning faith. And if you don't have a strong basis of fellowship, it just wears on you and wears on you and wears on you. It may be a month. It may be a year. It may be 10 years. You'll fall. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals. Do not be deceived. Don't think you're the exception. I'm telling you, I will fall if I get away from Christian fellowship and get involved in it. Amen. I will fall. I will not deceive myself into believing that I'm the exception. I know I'm not the exception. I could fall. And so we have to get to a place where we just simply say to ourselves, we're going to separate ourselves from that in a righteous way, in a loving way. Not reject anyone, but invite them to come with us. But if they don't come, we're not staying back. We're not staying in the wilderness because they won't go to the promised land with us. Yes. We're going to the promised land. Okay, let me say this. Are you afraid of being closer to Christians? Are you afraid of that? Now, I was telling you that I smoked. I smoked for many years after I became a Christian. I had some of the best quiet times I've ever had in my life. I had 3 or 4 Marlboros. You know, I mean, I did. And the Lord was so sweet to me. I remember one day I was just smoking, having the best quiet time of my life. You know, just drinking a cup of coffee and smoking and just reading my Bible and praising Jesus. And I was. And the Lord came to me and just said, Jimmy, I can't do what I want to do in your life if you smoke. He was so gracious to me. We ought to be gracious, because it was the hardest thing I ever did was to stop smoking. Well, be gracious with people who are trying to stop smoking and have other issues. But God couldn't have done in my life what He wanted to do if I smoked. I don't think you'd appreciate it if I stand up here saying, turn to Genesis, you know. But I'll tell you one thing, I sure struggled with it. When I stopped smoking, I dreamed every night for years that I was smoking. Anybody relate to what I'm saying? And I felt so self-conscious in the midst of Christians going in there. But I made a decision. I was never going to stop. I counseled with a couple one day, nice people, and they did not go to church because they both smoked. And they said that they felt self-conscious around Christian people. Well, I want to say there are some self-righteous Christian people who are hootsie-tootsie. And I don't like them either. I mean, I love them, but you know what I'm saying. We need to be gracious to each other. But let me say this. The way to get better is to get around better people. And I'm a golfer. And I have, you know, played golf all my life. I always play better golf when I'm with better golfers. Always. And there is always the tendency not to want to play with better golfers because you're the hack of the group. You know. And sometimes I'm the hack of the group. I'm a decent golfer. Sometimes I'm the worst golfer of the group. And you feel self-conscious because they're standing up hitting these great shots. But here's what I find. I begin to emulate them and I get better. It's more comfortable to be with a bunch of hacks where I'm the best. But I won't get better. And I'm not looking back and despising people for their weakness. I'm simply saying this. Now, you can stay in the wilderness if you want to. I'm going into the land of giants. I'm going to learn to fight. I'm going to do what God's told me to do. And you know something? I'll never be a better warrior standing out here talking to you people. I'm going into the land and I'm going to fight and I'm going to take my land, because every good thing that happens to me is going to happen to me in there, not back here. I'm tired of manna. I want milk and honey. I'm tired of talking about the promise. I want the promise. And I'm going into the promise. And if you want to stay in the wilderness, God love you. I love you. I'm going to the promised land. And that's what I'm saying. And there are some people that they won't go. And sometimes it's a fearful thing because you may feel uncomfortable. You may feel fearful around Christians. Karen and I went to the first Bible study that we really went to, that we got close to other Christians. And we signed up for it. It was a discipleship group. And, you know, we got into this group, and I was still dealing with smoking, and I felt self-conscious. And you had to go around and talk and tell about yourself. You know, I just hated that. You know, I was just like, oh, my gosh. You know, but you know something? The thing I loved about it is everybody in the group was so messed up. I mean, by the end of the group, I was so encouraged. I thought, oh, my, I'm better than all these people. Not really, but... Can I tell you something? Can I tell you a little secret about Christians? First of all, you're going to have problems in church and you're going to have problems with Christians. But let me tell you, you're going to have bigger problems with non-Christians than out of church. So it's not heaven just because you're in church. You got to get your mind on straight that there are going to be giants, and even in this land. But bad church is better than a good world. Christians can be counted on better than any other group of people. And I would never, ever, ever go back. But you just have to make your mind up that just says that I'm going to commit to this thing now. And I'm not going to give up. That's how Karen and I got to our promised land, is by getting around Christian people. And by staying committed, even when we got hurt, even when we've been through issues, which we have. Christian people are the most wonderful people in the world. But they're not perfect. And you say to yourself, well, Jimmy, I'm dealing with drugs. I'm dealing with sexual addiction. I'm dealing with all these things. Well, I've been a pastor for a long time. I've talked to a lot of people privately. And I want to tell you something. We're all messed up. We really are. And I'm not saying everybody's in sin. I'm not saying that. But everybody deals with issues. And you come into a church setting, because this is how I felt. You come into a church setting around Christian people, and you judge them by their exterior. And you look at them, and you think, well, boy, I'm messed up, and I'm not spiritual, and all these other people are spiritual. Let me just say something. We're all in the same boat. We all need Jesus. And you're only going to get better when you get around committed Christian people. They're not perfect, but they're committed to the same journey you are. Step number 6 to your promised land is the step of faith to scripturally parent our children. When the children of Israel went into the promised land, God sternly told them through Moses to diligently teach their children the ways of God. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Parenting takes faith, because you can't produce immediate results. Some things you can produce immediately, of a child not running in the street or, you know, sticking something in a light socket and things like that. But character is forged over a long period of time. Galatians 6, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. He who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. He who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Parenting takes faith because of discouragement. Your kids rebel. They go, just when you've got this stage mastered, they change stages. You know, and they go into the next stage, and it's just a constant process. And you know that you see all the things, and a lot of women think, well, I'm a terrible mother. I mean, if I was a good mother, my kids would be these perfect kids. You do not know what kind of a job you've done until your children turn 30. It doesn't say you train up your child the way they should go and instantly you can produce results. It says when they get old, they'll come back. And so that's a comfort. It takes faith. It takes faith to parent because of the deception of our age. We live in an anti-biblical society. This book, The Da Vinci Code, is just a bunch of nonsense about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene and having all these children. It is thoroughly debunked in every... If you want to see it debunked, watch the 60 Minutes episode on The Da Vinci Code. It's baloney. Millions of people have changed their minds about God because of that baloney. We have all kinds of experts spewing out all kinds of baloney and deceiving a lot of people and destabilizing them in their faith. Let me talk about spanking for just a minute. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. This is Proverbs 23. This is the Message version. Don't be afraid to correct your young ones. A spanking won't kill them. A good spanking, in fact, might save them from something worse than death. Proverbs 13:24. This is the Message version. A refusal to correct is a refusal to love. Love your children by disciplining them. Don't beat your children. Don't flail your children. When you spank your children, you do it on their bottoms. You do it in a very controlled manner. You warn them and you say, honey, don't do that. You know, and if they defy you, you just take them in the bedroom and have them bend over, and we just take a little bitty, you know, like we had a little wooden spoon with flowers on it. And, you know, we really did. We carried it everywhere we went. But, you know, you swat them 2 or 3 times on a little bottom, then you forgive them and you pray for them and you tell them you love them, and you don't flail a child or yell at a child and things like that. It's very, very controlled and everything like that. But our society today says that spanking causes kids to be violent and spanking this and this. I'm going with God every time. And we raised our children, spanking is the answer for everything. But we raised our children according to the Bible. And let me just tell you something. All this psychobabble comes and goes. And the expert that has all the answers today is debunked 10 or 15 years from now, but you've built your entire parenting upon it. Yeah. Don't build your parenting upon shifting sand that comes and goes. Build it on the Word of God. Because 100 years from now, it'll still be true. And You just have to make a decision and it doesn't mean you can't learn from books and other people. It means when something someone says is against the Bible, stay with the Bible because it works, it's eternal. Number seven step is the step of faith to say no to sin and believe that if we do the right thing, that God will reward us. I'm an apostolic elder in Gateway Church in Southlake, and they asked me, because on their website, they have stuff about us on their website, and they said, what is your life motto? And here's my life motto: do the right thing and trust God. That's my life motto. If you do the right thing, you can trust God. The step of faith to say no to sin and believe that if we do the right thing, that God will reward us. We were on Dennis Straney's radio program, Karen and I were recently, and Dennis has a wonderful ministry, marriage and family ministry. And we were on his program, and we were talking about our marriage and our difficulties in the early days of our marriage and what a jerk I was, and I didn't meet Karen's needs and everything. And so Dennis, great interviewer, and he looked at Karen and said, were you tempted to commit adultery? And Karen said, I wouldn't let my mind go there. It is a choice that we have. And in the worst times of our marriage, Karen prayed for me and believed God that if she did the right thing, it would turn our marriage around. She's the reason our marriage turned around. Because in the face of not getting her needs met and living with a jerk husband, rather than her looking somewhere else, she prayed and trusted God, and the result is the marriage we have right now. You will be presented with temptation. You will be presented with an opportunity to go back to Egypt and to find a way out of where you are right now. But the only right thing to do is to face down your giants and the things that are threatening you and to do the right thing and to trust God. This was when I started selling appliances. I was the top salesman the first month I ever sold because my dad was an appliance salesman. I'm a salesman. I love to sell. You know, I like people. And so I was the top salesman. I sold a lot, and I worked with a gentleman, and he was kind of a rascal, but I liked him. He was, you know, he's a nice guy, and we worked together. But once I became, I was working for my dad, actually, but Karen and I were life group leaders here at the church. I was a deacon here at the church, and we also had a Sunday school class. Plus, we had two little kids at home, and I had a full-time job. And this guy came to our home, and he had a product he wanted to sell, and he wanted me to sell it too. And so he came to my home, and he knew, we worked together, he knew that I could sell. And he came to me and he said, how much money would you like to be making? And I said, a whole bunch, a lot. And he said, well, I mean, like how much? And I said, I don't know, a whole bunch. He said, like $50,000 or $100,000. And at that time I was probably making $25,000 or $6,000 or something. And he said, and I said, yeah, I'd love to make $50,000. He said, you could, Jimmy, I'm telling you right now, you could. And he told me about his product and how much money he was making and all that. And I said, wow, that's great. Well, how can I make that kind of money? And he said, well, it's going to take some time now. You're not going to be able to do all this church stuff. And it's going to take some time, you know, maybe away from your kids. But once you make this money, you can do all the things for your kids that you want to do. And he gave me that deal and he finished. And I said, well, I understand what you just said. And let me tell you my response. My response is, never will I stop serving God in our church for any amount of money. Never are we saying no to our children for any amount of money. And I may live poor, but I'm going to live poor with a happy family and with my conscience toward God. But if it takes sacrificing my faith or my family to make all this money that you're making, the answer is no. Now, he mocked us. He was in my home, and he started mocking me. And mocking the fact that I was stupid, that I didn't know what I was doing, that I didn't know what I was turning down. As gifted as I was, I could make all this money. And I smiled. I never got unpleasant with him. I just smiled. And I said, that's my response. And I've had a lot of those opportunities through the years of people coming to me and promising me all the money that I can make if I'll just compromise. But all I know is that his life has been hurtful, just very unpleasant. He didn't get rich. It was a disaster. I look back at our life, you know, if the devil can't scare you off, he'll try to bribe you. And he's pretty good at what he does, isn't he? He knows the package that you like. And he knows the contents that you like. And if your deal's a sex deal, He's got your number. If your deal's a money deal, He's got your number. If your deal's a popularity deal, power deal, He knows your weakness. He's been mapping you since the day you were born. And to keep you away from your promised land at just the right time, He will show up and offer you this deal. By the way, this guy that came to our house and offered me this deal, it was, I can't remember all the exact timing, it was within months of when I came on staff at the church. Say no to sin and believe God for the results. You've got to say no. There's going to be temptation as you enter into the promised land, compromise, sin, robbing Jericho, all those temptations that come. And our motto, Karen and I, our life motto is we do the right thing and trust God. And I'll tell you what, it works every time. And I'm telling you, God has a promised land for you. You can have your dream marriage. There will be a lot of fear that you have to deal with along the way because giants bring fear and the devil uses fear to try to control our lives. But fear will always lead you to the wrong actions that lead you to the wrong results that lead you to more hurt and more fear. But faith is the way out. Faith is the way out of Egypt. Faith is the way out of the wilderness, and faith is the way into the promised land. And Karen and I's journey has been a journey of facing down giants and coming into the land that God has given us, and God has a land for you.
Thank you for listening. This is the conclusion of the series, I Dream of Marriage by Jimmy Evans. For more information or additional resources by Jimmy Evans, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.